Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show.
Today's guest is Stuart McHugh, IT manager at Bates Wells Braithwaite. We'll get started. I normally kind of ask this question at first anyway, but who and how did people inspire you or motivate you and lead you early on in your career? And is there any particular people or examples led you to become where you are today?
That's a good question. So when I really had a change in my mindset was actually when this medium came popular, funnily enough, podcasting. I like podcasts and I've listened to them for some time, but this is sort of niche. I mean, back in the day, you look at old VNU publications like Computing and things like newspapers like that. There's not a lot of content out there, and IT was sort of still new-ish. When podcasting first sort of hit the masses, things like Leah, I'm sure you know Leah Laporte is, like, you know, you get news from people across the other side of the planet or about things that you're interested in. And all of a sudden I found that digesting and ingesting and getting information about IT became a lot easier. And then that just inspired me to inspired me to get better at what I do. It increased my knowledge. It made me talk to other people about IT, and I was knowledgeable and they were knowledgeable. And it just brought sort of this niche IT community together and got everyone talking.
Brilliant. Yeah. And that was it at that point that you kind of, based on what you'd learned, you sought it out, and then did you reach out to other individuals? How did you approach kind of progressing from there and turning it into a career?
Well, I've always been interested in IT, without a doubt. But once I started sort of really finding out what there was in the world with IT, so, you know, your big companies like your Microsoft, your Googles, and things that interest me as well, like in the virtualization platform, so like VMware, their competitors, like Microsoft Hyper-V, things like that. When I started learning and finding out this information about what's going on was more accessible, I just started speaking to more people about it. I think it took a lot off. It took off when I started attending conferences. And when you start talking intelligently about something that you're passionate about, people start asking questions and people want to know more. And I'm passionate about what I do, there's no doubt. And when I got involved in the VMware community, I started speaking at those events. And there's sort of like a point where you think, oh, I've listened to some podcasts from that person who's actually sitting over there. And all of a sudden they became very accessible. I would almost have like a star shock with people. Oh, that's Mike Laverick is one of the people I used to look up to. I went over and spoke to him and said, oh, I really enjoy your podcast. And we took it from there. In fact, the reason why I have a podcast today of my own is because I went and spoke to Mike Laverick and I told him that I enjoy his podcast and one of the ones he used to do, he should bring back. And what he said to me was, I'll only bring it back if you'll be my co-host. So I was really taken back by that, you know, to not being really speaking to any people at all in IT, apart from the people just sitting around me, to getting this into podcasts, to speaking to these sort of mini celebrities, to the, for them to be accessible, and then for him to challenge me and say, okay, well, you've been in the podcast as well, because I'm not doing it on my own. That was a real eye-opener, a real shocker for me. But yeah, that was great. And that opened some doors for me, and people got to know my name in those sort of virtualization circles. And that was really good for me. That was, I was really passionate about that anyway. And when you hear anyone speaking with any sort of passion about a topic that they love, you know, it's, you get drawn in.
What? Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating, actually, because I think that a lot of people potentially misunderstand the purpose of a blog, of a podcast, or some kind of medium. And I actually think that today it just requires you to do things like this in order to kind of excel your career and build your network and kind of prove that what you're doing, you actually have an idea about what you're talking about. And it's your opportunity to kind of, you know, build your own kind of mini platform.
Yeah, absolutely. I really took the podcast in when it sort of first hit the masses. You know, I listened to something not too long ago about YouTube. It was actually Gary Vaynerchuk, a guy in the US, and he was talking about making his first YouTube video. When the production of making a video used to be really, really high, and making YouTube videos you can do on your phone now. So, you know, podcasting is not an expensive thing to do. Yeah, sure, I do host my own website, and I do have to pay for that, but it's not expensive. Creating a podcast is quite easy to do, and I enjoyed listening to them. So, it's 2017. This is something that anyone can do, and I don't do it for the listenership or publicity. I do it because I like and enjoy doing it. So in this day and age, producing this type of thing is, I wouldn't say, you know, is easy peasy, but you know, it's certainly doable.
What was it about VMware, particularly that has motivated you and given you such a passion for it?
Well, funnily enough, it's a combination of things. It was a technology that I've been using now since about 20. When did I start doing it? About 2003 or something. You know, over a decade I've been using VMware, and it's technology I picked up. It was quite a new technology at the time, and there wasn't a lot of information out there. But what I would say really helped me along the way was the VMware community. I'm a VMware V expert, and I have been since 2012. And in February, just gone, they announced this year's V experts, and luckily I'm on the list. There's about 130 of us in the UK, and it's just an annual award for people who sort of give back to the community, like as far as helping out at events or talking at events, blogs, podcasts. But really, going to the conference, presenting at a local conference, and people are interested to know, you know, this isn't a compulsory thing. People aren't forced to go to these events. You know, I'm only talking about 7,500 people at the London VMware user group meeting. But people, after your presentation, people will come up to you and thank you. So, that really spurred me on, and it really inspired me to carry on, and it really inspired me to speak to other people who did the same thing as well and just collaborate. I'm not here to promote VMware, but the VMware user group is like a very, very good one, I would say.
We know that you're working within IT and within law specifically, and you built a career out of working within law. A lot of people probably don't even think about IT and law and put it together necessarily, and how big the teams can actually be. What is the kind of typical structure for an IT team within a law organization?
Okay, yeah. So I've been working in legal IT for some time now. I don't think the structure is particularly different for the IT department per se. So, you know, typically, I would say typically, because this is what I see, so it might be different for someone else, but you have your sort of help desk, and you might have your infrastructure engineers, project teams, training teams. But what I think really makes a difference to IT is the business. You know, typically, you'll have equity partners. You'll have a boss of some type. You might report to the CTO or COO, but really, you've got an equity partner level who basically hold the purse strings. And if you want to do any sort of project in IT, you really have to have equity partner buy-in. There's no point rolling out a product or an update or introducing something new without the business really buying into it. We can't have, you know, an IT director saying, right, we're going to do this new product. The business don't know about it, but we're just going to do it. And we'll communicate with the business and this new thing is coming. The projects are running in what is normal to me in such that you make sure you have business sponsors and things like that. And maybe that is normal to everyone, but you haven't just got your boss. You can almost say every equity partner is another manager to you. And you just have to manage it in such a way that you really have to be mindful of what you're trying to achieve, who you need to report to, and what the pinch points are, not just pushing the project out, but what people's user experience will be and whether they're interested in seeing this user experience as well. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And one thing I always think about within law as well is within the IT department, you're always pushing in IT and tech for the next thing. You know, you need the next software that's come out, the next, you know, whatever it is, the next coding language that we need to learn, and we need to invest in this, and because it's going to make for efficiencies and this, that, and the other. As the communication side of it, is that sometimes quite difficult for technical people to be able to elaborate what it is when they need something new or they need the hierarchy to invest in something new? Is that a consistent challenge that you find being in a technical position?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, anyone sitting on a help desk or an engineer or anything like that, talk to each other in a technical fashion, and that's what the job requires. I think when someone like me comes into the picture, I do not mention anything technical whatsoever to a partner or above, nothing at all. But my end goal is to introduce technology, but I have to translate it in such a way where, you know, I'm going to make what you're doing more efficient. The problems that you're having today will take away, and we solve that with technology because, you know, we work in IT. But yeah, I certainly have to make sure I pitch it in such a way that we're solving business problems. That's I believe that is what we are here to do. We're here to solve business problems. That's problem is normally a solution with using technology.
Do you see that where people are super talented, but they don't get the promotion they ought because they become the head of? Simply because of these communication issues to the hierarchies?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I've not always been good at this. It's something that is, you know, it's not always difficult. Getting time with a lawyer in whatever position is tricky. You know, if you're interrupting one of their six-minute windows where they have to bill a client, you're costing them money. And to speak to the senior lawyers, they'll be partners. If you interrupt an hour of their day or a tenth of that, a 6 minute segment, then not mess around too much. And it takes a while to get to grips with that. I think I'm in the position today where, because I've got better at what I do, and it doesn't come naturally to everyone. I've tried and I've failed and I've tried again.
but that's the part of the learning process, isn't it? I mean, that's always the question, a question that I like to ask anyway, is like, you know, developing your leadership style and, you know, it's always a combination of learning from people and, like, say, trial and error. Has it been a similar combination for yourself?
There's lots of different ways of doing it, I think. There's certainly a trial and error aspect to it. But there's also, so an example where I wanted to speak to the board level members about IT projects for the year. I don't think they've ever had that before. And some of them probably don't care. Some of them might be mildly interested. So I went to the managing partner and said, you're having a partner meeting. Can I just have just 10 minutes in your meeting just to tell everyone what we've got planned for the year? So he agreed. So, you know, I sort of went along a bit of humbly and just said, no, can I just have just 10 minutes? This is IT in the whole firm. And I'm trying to find the right forum to talk about it. So, you know, there's different ways of doing it. That's a way that I found worked for me. And, you know, there were certainly people who weren't interested. And there were people who thought, oh, we've never had this before. That's actually really good to know. And now I understand the direction of where we're going in. So that was one way I sort of infiltrated and got into the business and speaking to them about, you know, the technology that we have and where we're heading in and why it matters to them.
Yeah. Do you think it's a subtle approach then over like just sheer persistence to kind of get your voice heard for things like verticals and as you just explained?
I think both, because that was an opportunity to speak to everyone at the same in one room at one time, which was great. But shortly after that, you know, I'll take time out and try and visit people, you know, on a sort of every so often basis, and that will be about persistence. Because sometimes someone was like, I'm really busy, piss off. But you know what? By putting myself out there, you'll get opportunities. If you don't put yourself out there, if you get scared by someone saying, look, I'm really busy, and don't try again, then, you know, you've got to keep going. You've got to be persistent, because there will be times when people can't talk to you. But you'll get respected for people just going to them and saying, oh, I am here. If you're busy now, fine. But, you know, I'm, you know, where I sit, you know, my phone number. So there's different ways of doing it. And I've learned that, yeah, try as many different ways as you can without obviously hassling people. There's a balance.
Yeah, 100%. But also, the thing I've learned as well is when you do have the opportunity to sit down with people, they really, I mean, this is just the sad truth about people. They only really care about what you do if it's going to help them in some way or it's going to do them a favor in some way. But I've always found that the only way I've been able to get things moved is to actually go to people and be like, I've done this and this is helping you this much. But if if we can just do this, you know, and I need you to approve this or help this, it will then increase that improvement. That's been the only way I've ever known it to actually have an impact and get things moved forward.
No, I think on a one-to-one basis, if you've got the approach of going to visit someone, it's really helpful to have some ammunition with you. On a one-to-one basis, you want to go in there and say, hi, how are you doing? I think it's really helpful just to say, oh, well, we've just done this project and you should notice this improvement. You should see something. Or even if you haven't completed something, you can also say, we're starting this project, you know, you should notice this improvement in 4 weeks' time, 6 weeks' time, even if it's like 6 months potentially. So it's always helpful to make sure you've got something to start a conversation with. You can't go in there and ask them how their IT is, how their computer is. 9 times out of 10, you'll get something that won't help you in your job. You'll just get like, oh, well, actually, my keyboard doesn't work very well. And although, you know, you'll just log that and get a new keyboard for them or something, or get one of the guys, you know, get the guys or girls to see that person. Really, you want to be talking about what their business problems are. So, you know, going in there and asking what perhaps their frustrations with processes are and what, just how their day is going. But you can't go in there and just say, how's IT working for you? Because they don't know any better, and that's not meant to sound rude for them. They get given this thing that you might have created, or you know, even their IT system that they're using. And if they've been there for a long period of time, they might not know, you know, there's a new and better way of doing things. So, you know, going in there with ideas is sometimes helpful, but just listening to what they have to say.
Do you also even get that, like, well, I don't want a new and better way? Is that the most frustrating way, the most frustrating response of all time?
the most frustrating is, it's fine. It's just absolutely useless. Oh, well, God's fine. I was like, oh, that's not helpful. But then if you ask them how their IT system is, they're going to go, oh, it's fine. It's all right. Most of the time, it's fine. But that's why, you know, you have to be a bit constructive with your questions.
Curious about your own team and the style in which kind of you approach it. There's a lot of management styles out there, and there's a lot of rubbish that doesn't particularly work very well. I'm compelled to learn about how you keep your team engaged and motivated.
I think if I was in an opportunity where I was employing someone, it's tough to measure someone's skill set versus their passion. And I get to, it depends on what level you're employing someone at as well. So if you've got someone who's really passionate but not as skillful, and you've got someone who's really skillful but not as passionate, I'll definitely take the passion over skill, because you can train someone up. You can give them, I don't want to say give them a manual to read, but I'm sure you know what I mean. You can train someone up and give them the knowledge. But if they don't care about what they do, then in my view, that they're not as a useful person. You know, that doesn't go with my ethos. I try and motivate my team because I enjoy what I do. I enjoy technology, and rubs off on. I think that rubs off on everyone else around you, because they can see that you're there for a reason. Motivation is to motivate them as well. I care about the people who sit around me, and I want to make sure that they're happy in what they're doing, and they know that I'm here to help them as well. You know, if everyone has a bad day, for sure, but I think you have around you people who work for you. I think that will motivate them in knowing that there's always someone there who's going to be there. You need to empathize with them. So, yeah, I think
you're almost saying then that it's like the essence of any successful person is that they generally enjoy what they do. So it doesn't really make sense for anyone to be in a leadership position if it's not very transparent that they enjoy what they're doing.
I would say that's true, yeah. I think, shall I just say yes? I think that is true. I think motivation comes from many different angles, though. Like I said, I'm passionate about what I do. However, motivating staff is really tricky. You can motivate staff by just letting them go on a Friday half an hour early and think, oh, that's really good. I've been working really hard. I'm just going to let them go. It doesn't cost you anything. There's plenty of things you can do that won't cost anything just to try and motivate your staff. But that's not for everyone. Some people aren't motivated by letting them go 30 minutes early. Projects sometimes motivate people. Oh, we're doing this new rollout of some technology. And they're like, great, get to get my hands dirty, get to learn a new skill. That's really good. When that's not forthcoming, you can often reinvent things, not for the sake of reinventing things, but you can reinvent things that don't cost money. So new technology that just have updates, a new way of doing things. I think it's about challenging people's thoughts. You know, it's about like, oh, we've got these technologies? Are we using them in the best way? You know, do you think we could make an improvement? Asking the right questions to your team, and not dictating to them, but asking them the questions and trying to get them to realize and have thoughts about what we have.
Right. Yeah, getting them involved. Yeah, exactly. I heard a really good one the other day where it was sort of they're basically saying everyone is a leader within a team, and it's giving people the authority to go ahead on a certain project with, you know, within IT, we're talking, and take the reins and lead them and giving them the freedom and having confidence in people to actually achieve something and then supporting them. That's leadership, is allowing them to lead, but you're actually giving them the encouragement along the way. Like, that seems to be a leadership style that tends to be consistent in proving success.
I agree. Getting champions of things is really important, and then encouraging that skill set just to grow. I think similar to what you said, something recently which sticks in my head is sometimes people ask for permission to do something. I don't mean permission to go and buy a sandwich or something, but they have an idea and they're like, oh, this thing could really work, and they want to bounce that off someone. So sometimes people just need a sort of mental permission. But what that gives them is obviously, okay, well, I'm going to go and do that thing now, that technology or that solution. But what it also does is it gives them a fallback plan if someone challenges them and say, well, why are you doing that? And it gives them the fallback to go, well, my boss said this would be a good idea, and he's got confidence in me, and he's instilled that into me. So that's why I'm doing it. So I think there's a couple of different levels on that. I think that's it's a powerful thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've pretty much covered most of the stuff that I wanted to cover today, actually. So, yeah, I mean, that's actually a really good place probably for us to finish. I know we're at the 30-minute mark anyway. So, yeah, we've covered a lot there. I mean, definitely like external networking at the start, verticals, and then motivation at the end. So I think we've got plenty there, mate, to go by. Actually covered a lot of material, so thanks for doing that.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.